Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast, Jaeger Sepia Review and More. This podcast is sponsored by Jaeger Sepia Review, the course provider that deals only with the ASCPA blueprints. Please go to the JaegerCPAReview.com website and look at our various products. And we believe in seeing is believing. And therefore, please look at our 3-day free trial. Pick a subject, and it'll give you 3 days free access, unlimited, to that product. And I believe that once you look at that product and see how it works, you will pick Jaeger CPA Review as your course provider. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 301-874-4900. If you press 5, you may even talk to Phil Jaeger. Take care, everyone, on your journey for the CPA exam. We wish you the best and good luck.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Jaeger CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at JaegerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Jaeger.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Jaeger, and welcome to my podcast, CPA Review and More. And today, I say that it is some CPA review, but it's also more than that. So, you know, I have my guest today, Tom, and I must be honest and upfront, Tom was a student of ours in the Jaeger CPA Review course, and he passed the exam. And I'm not here to just praise the Jaeger CPA Review course, but I want to give you an idea of what it's like to study for the exam. And what makes Tom sort of unique is that he took the exam later on in life when he was 98, right? No, not 98, Tom, in his mid-40s, all right? And he wants, I figured, let someone else tell you in their mid-40s, because people say, hey, I'm in my mid-40s, I'm too old to take the CPA exam, I'll never pass. But Tom did pass, and I wanted him to share his what he did as far as studying, that type of thing. All right. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Hey, Phil. Good morning, and thank you for having me today.
It's my pleasure, Tom. Thank you. And Tom, you were a student of the Jaeger CPA Review course, correct?
Correct.
All right. And one of the things that's very important is, first of all, you study for the CPA exam, is picking the right course. How did you decide to pick our course? And by the way, I'm going to try to be as unbiased as possible. I don't want people to think that I'm here just to promote the Jaeger CPA Review course. How did you decide to take one course over another?
Great question. I think most people with the CPA review course, if there's not somebody they're working with recommending a specific company, they're starting with Google. So I started with Google, google.com. And Jaeger doesn't come up first. We know that. I mean, Jaeger's a smaller company. You know, you're not paying millions of dollars in advertising fees. So I started looking, doing free trials. You know, when I looked at the bigger ones, I saw some things. And I was about ready to make a decision, but I had been reading some reviews and something told me, well, look at Jaeger. So I extended my search and I looked at Jaeger CPA review. I did a free trial. I got a look at how the course was set up, the books. I read some things that people that seemed really knowledgeable and have some firsthand experience had written about that. And I decided to give Jaeger a try.
Now, a lot of testimonials that are online, okay, you know, basically the internet is not controlled in any way. So how did you know that, you know, for example, and our testimonials are truly testimonials, but, you know, not all courses have actual testimonials. They could, you know, they could make it up and say anything they want. How could you tell that our testimonial was really truthful versus, you know, ones that just, you know, the courses might write themselves and say how great they are?
That's where I think you got to be really careful, because what I looked at is the companies that they have these sites and they review different CPA courses. I looked at that, but I kept in mind that they're all getting paid. So they're getting paid by different CPA review courses. But if I found consistencies in things they were saying, Jaeger's, I found some very consistent things that the books were very easy to follow. So like I said, even among, it's kind of like the news media, you hear a lot of things, but if you hear the same thing consistently, there's more likelihood that it's true.
Did you go totally on those? Those are affiliate marketers who are supposedly reviewing the classes. Did you find any, by comparing, did you find any inconsistencies on what they were saying versus for example, what I might have told you about the course? And, you know, once again, they're being compensated based on the review courses. So the question is, how did you know that what they're saying is a truthful review versus, you know they're being compensated? So, you know, maybe if they're compensated more by another course, they'll write something really even nicer about that course. Were you able to tell that some of those reviews might have been a little, not exactly truthful, where you knew that they were being compensated by the CPA review courses?
I got that idea. Yeah, I got that idea when I put something in Google and it comes up first every time, and I hear all this great information that there's going to be this shortcut and I can cut my time in half of studying, and I tend to get suspicious. So I did feel that that was going on, and that's part of the reason this took so long to find a review course. I literally was doing this for about 6 or 7 weeks, looking at all the different review courses.
Now, what trial did you use? Did you use that 3-day trial? What trial did you use to see how our course worked?
Well, at the time, I believe it was more than a 3-day trial, because this was October, November 2019. So I think you were closer to a week at that point.
And you got free use of it. No one restricted you and say you got to just use this part or that part of the. In other words, we have the CPA, they have the CRAM course, we have the test bank. You had complete access to that, correct?
Yeah, I had definitely enough access to tell that, to make a decision about the course.
Now, did you find a lot of the test banks? Did you look at any other test banks of other courses, all right, versus the Jaeger course?
Yeah, and I looked at various parts. A lot of them were pretty locked down, where you could get just a small piece of the course. Fair enough. I obviously don't want to give the whole course away, but I was able to make enough comparisons to say I was willing to give Jaeger a shot.
Because when we do our test bank, we don't necessarily have all the bells and whistles that the other courses have. We just have basically multiple choice questions, all right? And you can pick, a certain number, but we don't have all these bells and whistles, and supposedly we can tell you based on how you do on the multiple choice whether you should take the exam now or not. That's a big thing now. That seems to be, you know, all the courses come up with their gimmicks. And I always felt that our course was more or less just a straightforward course, you know, study the material, right? Study the concepts, understand them, and then practice with multiple choice questions. And let me ask you, do you feel you needed hundreds and hundreds of multiple choice to practice with?
Not really. I think that was one thing I liked about Jaeger was the multiple choice questions were geared toward the blueprints, I felt. And I think that they were strategically placed in such a way that if you got through those, you had a pretty good, you know, pretty good understanding of the blueprints if you can make through all those multiple choice questions.
Because there are courses that say they have thousands of multiple choice questions, and also they recommend you do thousands of multiple choice questions, all right? And if you keep doing them over and over and over, you'll pass the exam, all right? You think that's the case, that you have to do, you know, you do thousands of questions, and the more you do, the better chance you have of passing the exam? What do you think of that statement?
Definitely not an approach I wanted to try. I think that somebody could do thousands of multiple choice questions, and if they really were to dig into why each one was wrong, they might be able to. That would be kind of a backwards way of studying that I wouldn't want to pick at this point. I think people get sold on that because they think it's a shortcut. You know, they think, okay, well, I don't have to study the material. I don't have to read the book. I don't have to listen to lectures. You know, and maybe if you would have caught me 15 years ago, I might have been more into that type of wanting to seek out that type of shortcut. But I just don't see there being any shortcuts to this.
How did you prepare yourself for the task-based simulations? When you took the exam, did they have the task-based simulations?
Yeah. I think that going through, so yeah, you had, you know, eight of them on FAR and eight on audit, and BEC had four and three written communications, and I believe regulation had, you know, eight, if I'm remembering correct here. But with those simulations, I think once you through the material and you understand it, and Jaeger has some simulations, and also the AICPA practice test helped a lot there.
Well, once again, as a review course, we're competing against these other courses who, once again, you know, claim they have thousands or hundreds of task-based simulations to practice with, all right? Why didn't you take a course that had more task-based simulations to practice with?
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, I wonder if you told me that you had a FAR course with 500 task-based simulations and 5,000 multiple-choice questions, would I even make it through those?
That's true.
At the end of the day, there's only so much time, and you've got to gain an understanding of the material, because you get to the exam, they're not going to ask you a simulation that you saw in a review course. You don't know what they're going to ask you.
Would you say that you studied the blueprints, right?
Yeah.
Right? And they are integrated in our books. By studying the blueprints and the text material, did you come across any areas on the different parts of the exam that were not stated in the blueprints?
Yeah, like I said, going to the exams, I never felt surprised by any simulation or multiple choice question. Out of, like I said, you know, hundreds of multiple choice questions and I think 31 simulations, there was one simulation on BEC where I'm not sure where they were going on it. But other than that, I never had that feeling on any of the tests. I felt like I was pretty well prepared for whatever they put there.
What was the, when you finished going through your initial studying, okay, watching the videos, doing the multiple choice in the back of the books, I guess, and the test bank, all right, what did you do as a final review before you went in there?
And this is one thing that's helped me a little bit older in life, being a little bit more established job-wise. I actually took a week off of work for most of the tests. And one of the final things I would do is I'd go through the multiple choice in the Jaeger books. In some cases, I would reread the books or I went through the CRAM course right before that week off. Usually just keep reviewing between simulations, multiple choice, things in the books, notes, whatever it took to feel I had a really good understanding of everything.
How'd you use the CRAM course to determine what you should go over again?
Well, a cram course is really good because gone through the books, I'd gone through multiple choice, I'd gone through simulation, and these video lectures, they're through 2-3 months ago, sometimes even more than that. The cram course, now you've got a course with half the time, you can go through it in, you know, maybe 3 or 4 days. It gives you a really good idea of, here's refreshing everything 9 days before the exam. So, you know, that's kind of how I used it. I watched it again, you know, 9 to 10 days. I started about 10 days before the exam and finished it in some cases 6 or 7 days before the exam. So once again, all that material is really fresh again.
If you didn't use the cram course at the end, if you went through everything, you think you still would have passed the exam?
I think I would have still passed regulation in business environment and concepts. I wouldn't have had as high of a score. Probably not with audit, and it probably would have been on the border with FAR.
When you did the CRAM, did you go through the CRAM and say, I know this area, but I'm not good on that area? You know, did you go back to those specific areas and study them more? Is that the way you used the CRAM, or did you just watch the CRAM and you wanted to see what areas you were weak on and basically spend more time on those? I'm not sure. What did you use the CRAM for? Obviously, it's a review at the end. It covers the concepts. We don't really do questions, all right? When you finish the CRAM, all right, were you able to determine what areas you need to go back and really go and look at again?
Yeah, I guess I'd say D, all the above on that. So it was a review. It triggered the memory. And it also directed me back to some other areas. I mean, especially FAR just, it goes on forever, you know? So it, you know, you forget what you forgot with FAR. So that definitely helped. It was very helpful with FAR.
When you came out of the different parts, did you feel you had passed them or you weren't sure? Or did you come out like everyone else and say, gee, I failed that part. I failed that part. What was your feeling after you came out?
Yeah, I actually, and this is something you probably haven't heard from a lot of students before. I would text myself the score that I thought I got after I left the test. So in every score, every test I felt I passed, and my text upon leaving was within 1 to 3 points every time. So
in other words, you walked out, you looked at that approach and you said, I think I passed that part. Is that the way you did it?
Or yeah,
we're still unsure. I guess that's
I left FAR. I thought there was a 90% chance that I passed it. I texted myself my score when it was released. It was within 3 points of that. The only one that was close was I thought there was a 60% chance that I passed audit. And audit was even closer, but I felt that there was a 90% chance I passed BEC. And with regulation, I thought there was a 99% chance that I passed it.
To pass the auditing part of the exam, okay, all right, did you ever work in public accounting?
I worked as a tax specialist with a financial planning company, and we had relationships with some accounting firms, and I did work for a couple months here and there at those accounting firms, but not very much public accounting.
Can you pass the auditing part of the exam without being in public accounting?
Yes.
Now, back then, what was your requirement, though, to get the license? What was the experience requirement?
Are you talking about my requirement? And because I was just licensed in Michigan about 6 weeks ago. So.
Oh, really? Okay. So, all right. What's Michigan's experience requirement once you pass the exam? You have to work in a public accounting firm? What's the experience requirement?
2,000 hours of experience, and they broadened it in 2010 where it can be tax preparation. They call it general industry experience, audit, things like that. So it's 2,000 hours within a 5-year period.
You don't have to work in a public accounting firm?
You don't have to work in a public accounting firm.
Is that still the case today as we speak?
Yeah, that's still the case. Like I said, it at one point you used to have the actual audit, that type of audit, financial statement audit. But in 2010, they changed the law on that and you no longer need that.
Because I was under the belief that most states follow the same experience requirement, namely, you have to work 1 year in a public accounting firm, all right, doing audits, that type of thing, or you can work in a non-CPA firm, all right? But you have to have a CPA who's willing to sign off on your experience, all right?
Yeah, Michigan does have that. A CPA had to sign off on my experience, a license.
Is that what a CPA did on yours?
Yes.
Okay. So how did you convince, who's the CPA? You know, because I know that thing says, under the penalties of perjury, okay, all right, that I, did that scare someone signing off? How did you get someone to sign off on that?
Well, I had really good documentation of a project that I'd worked on, and in all the hours were logged in a database. So, and I actually had about 3,000 hours within a 4-year period of time on this. So they felt it was a pretty open and shut case, I think. And I don't think they had any worries there.
You had one person who signed off,
yeah.
Only one person who could attest to those 3,000 hours that you worked on a certain project?
Yes.
Now, you work for a government agency, federal government, correct?
A state government.
State government. And you found a person to sign off, correct? All right?
Correct.
Did you find a problem finding someone to sign off on this?
That's a really good question, because when I started 10 years ago, somebody that hired in the same day as me passed a CPA exam within a few months, and they had trouble finding somebody. But in the past, I'd say 8 or 9 years, a lot more people become licensed. So I actually had a couple different choices this time.
I believe the experience requirement today with the 1 year working in public accounting or getting someone to sign off on the work you do, they're finding it very hard. A lot of people are finding it hard to get the experience requirement. All right, because they can't find a CPA who's willing to sign off. You know, if they don't work in a public accounting firm for a year, they're finding a lot of trouble getting people to sign off on this. And a lot of students, you know, they go through the 5-year thing now, or you don't have to get a master's program, but it's 5 years of college. They come out, do the 5 years, and then all of a sudden now they got to go find someone to sign off if they don't work in public accounting. What do you think of that? I mean, you think that's turning people off? Are the state boards, are they making it too difficult to get the CPA license?
That's probably the case in some states. I didn't think it was bad in Michigan. And I think there's a lot of employers that would be willing to work with someone here. From that part, I haven't experienced that much of that side.
Now, you work now for state and local government, correct?
Correct.
Right? And are you doing state and local government accounting? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
All right. And prior to that, you were a tax specialist in a financial planning company?
Correct.
All right. So the question is, all right, why did you leave? Which of the, obviously, of the two areas you've been in, you enjoy state and local government more than a tax specialist in financial planning. Is that correct? Or...
My heart would be more in that line of work, but I kind of liked working 8 to 5 better than 8 to midnight, especially during tax season. Having met my wife, wanted to get married, have a child, this situation works a lot better for that. I really did enjoy the private sector, though.
As a tax specialist in a financial planning company, you had to work long hours?
Yeah, very long hours, because in addition to doing all the tax returns, we were doing tax planning. So we're meeting with people all summer trying to make decisions that they could still kind of impact their tax return. Like in July, once the tax season's over with, the tax return is a pretty historic document. But if you start working on that January 1st of the year it's going to be filed, it's a little different, you know, because you're making decisions and you're doing things with your investments, with your business, or things like that.
So really, the company just did financial planning. They were not a CPA firm doing financial planning. All right. They were a financial planning company, correct?
Yeah, they were a financial planning company, but I worked for a tax planning company, which is under the same umbrella. So you have a group, and then under that group, you had a financial planning company and a tax planning company.
So let me understand. This was a CPA firm that had a financial planning department? Is that what it was?
No, this was a financial planning company. I worked for a tax planning company that was under the same umbrella. You know how you have a group of companies?
Yes, yes.
But I actually work for the tax and business company.
So, you know, there's a certification for financial planning, a CFP, okay? Sure. All right. Is there a reason you didn't go for the CFP, or do you have a CFP?
Yeah. Well, they tried to split those. So the when you're on the financial planning side, you're licensed with a Series 7, a Series 6, a life, accident, health, maybe a Series 24. And the certifications that follow that are the Chartered Financial Consultant and the Certified Financial Planner. Being on the tax side, I was an enrolled agent looking to maybe become a CPA. So we kept those separate most of the time.
You really didn't have to become an enrolled agent, though. I mean, you could have just passed the CPA exam because, I mean, what's the advantage of having an enrolled agent and a CPA? Is there any duplication there?
I think that, you know, I was an enrolled agent back in, you know, I took the exam back in 2005, became an enrolled agent in 2006. It was way easier to do that than I wouldn't have had all the requirements to be a CPA at that point. So I think it was a good start and I got a lot of mileage out of it. I plan to keep both designations just because I think there's some degree of specialization there. I mean, you can meet a lot of CPAs and they couldn't tell you much about taxes. I mean, they can tell you about Roth conversions, like if I wanted to go back into the planning end, or they couldn't tell you a lot about, you know, corporations and basis. And I think the EA, it gives you a little bit of a distinction that way.
I've looked at the EA exam and I think their questions on taxes seem harder than the ones on the CPA exam.
I thought they were. Yeah, I think, when I took the test, it was an 11-hour test over 2 days.
Wow.
11 hours over 2 days administered by the IRS. Now it's Thompson Prometric and you take it in three parts. But it wasn't like that before. So it was given in a similar way to the CPA exam back then.
So if you are an enrolled agent, would you recommend, if you can meet the requirements to take the CPA exam, that you should also have the CPA designation with the enrolled agent, or can you just get by with the enrolled agent?
Well, that's a really good question, because part of what inspired me to become a CPA was I remember meeting clients. I remember meeting one client. I had just passed the enrolled agent exam, 11-hour test over 2 days. I'd been studying tax planning strategies. I met her. I came up with a bunch of good ideas from her situation. And we got done, and her first question was, are you a CPA? And when we started talking, and I tried to ask her, you know, what she thought of the CPA designation, and she said she didn't know what it was. She said, I don't know what it is. I know you have to have it. So I think there's this belief out there that even people that, this is a business owner that makes a lot of money, that's pretty successful, and they just see that CPA designation in a different light.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because there's a shortage of CPAs, all right? The number of people taking a CPA exam has dropped tremendously. And I'm wondering, people don't know what the CPA does, all right? You know, I mean, when I graduated college, everyone said, oh, you got to go take the CPA. It's an academic exam. You're just out of school. We didn't have a shortage back then. I mean, we had so many people taking the exam. And that was because there was no 150-hour rule. Experience requirement, well, in Maryland, there's no experience requirement back then. Now there is. But I'm wondering if maybe people don't really know what a CPA does. And all they think about is he's a pencil pusher doing bookkeeping, okay? All right? It comes up in different meetings that I've gone to. Why are less people taking the CPA exam? Okay, is it just the generation that's coming out of school, or is there some other reason? Now, I never really hear what the reason is. Because this is a course providers. We go to meetings with the CPA examination division, all right, twice a year, and they ask any suggestions on how we get people take the CPA exam, because there is a shortage, and actually the number of people taking it is dropping. All right. So, I mean, would you say that maybe first of all, I ask this, why do you think the number of people taking the exam might be dropping?
I'm not sure on that. I wonder if it could have something to do with, it's a pretty hard path, and there's a lot of other paths you can go through and probably make, if you're trying to make a lot of money, you can probably do that pretty quickly. So some people come out of college, you know, with different IT fields and they're already making a six-figure income. I could see something, I could see that having an impact.
Yeah, I tell you, I think I agree with you on that because people coming out of college, they majored in finance, all right, or IT, and they don't have to go for a fifth year of a college, all right? Yeah. And the starting salaries are so much higher than a CPA, you know, an accountant going into a CPA firm, that type of thing. I think people are, you know, materialistic, however you put it, you know. Yeah. Hey, I want to come out and I want to make as much money as I can, all right? I think it's very idealistic to think, hey, I'm going to major in accounting, and I don't care if my starting salary is $20,000 less. I am still going to get that CPA designation. I don't think that's the case. I think it has to do with, you know, beginning salaries.
Yeah. Well, and back to what you were saying earlier on whether I'd recommend someone pursuing it if they're already an EA. When, I don't know if you remember, when the whole economy collapsed in 2008, we had the Great Recession, 2009. During that time, I was trying to get into a mid-sized regional accounting firm. So they're probably the 15th biggest in the United States. And I talked to the recruiter. She said, your resume looks really good, but you're not a CPA. Right now, because there's so many people looking for work, and keep in mind, Michigan had been in a single state recession for 6 or 7 years, and then the Great Recession hit. And she said, all I can hire now is CPA. She said, that'll probably be different in a couple of years, but that was kind of, and that's 2009, 2010. So that's 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. But that's what I was told by a, you know, a recruiter at a pretty prominent accounting firm.
But how was the starting salaries? I don't know if you had a basis of comparison, you know, being a CPA or not being a CPA, did it pay from a financial situation to become the CPA? All right. Now, obviously, in that case, you had to be a CPA. There was no choice. All right. But still, you know, there is still a shortage.
Yeah, I think as far as it paying, it probably doesn't pay on day one, but I think 5-10 years down the road is when it really pays.
Yeah, and actually during the Great Recession, okay, they were laying off finance majors, okay? All right, they were hiring CPAs instead of finance majors. And I think during a good economy, all right, yes, finance people get jobs as financial analysts, whatever, all right? But the minute the economy turns, you know, goes downhill, all right, then they want to get the CPAs on board to try to determine what the problems are, all right? But right now we're in a supposedly we're in a strong economy, all right? And they just don't want to do accounting. I don't know. I think it may have to do with the fact that they really don't know what the CPA does. You know, maybe they want something, IT sounds sexier, is that it? You know, finance sounds sexier, all right? Being an accountant, that's, you know, it's got a negative image. By the way, I'm just curious, you majored in what when you graduated? Well, when you were in college, what'd you major in?
Economics.
Economics, okay.
Yeah.
So how did you get, would you have to go back for another degree or?
Yeah, it was kind of a backwards path that I got into accounting. I was helping some coworkers with tax returns, and I really liked doing tax returns. I ended up going to a tax school of a tax prep company, and I really liked it. Then I went back to a community college, and they had a program that specifically works with people with bachelor's degrees, a very good program. In that process, that's when I got even more interested in tax. I became an enrolled agent. The CPA, it was a goal. So this is 2005, 2006 when I finished this. I did become an EA. And like I said, the CPA got set aside until, like I said, the last year or two.
You told me that you were in your mid-40s before you took the CPA exam. Is that correct?
Correct.
Why did you wait so long?
Well, you know, the mid 44 is the new 37 and a half, though.
I heard 36.
36, yeah. Well, I mean, if you Google midlife crisis, you know, you see all these things like getting a sports car or a motorcycle, and those, you know, they're all expensive. You know, pursuing the CPA exam, it seems a little bit better. But, you know, it goes back to kind of what I was saying, you know, the experience with clients wanting to hire a CPA, the experience with the recruiter, you know, telling me your resume looks great, but you're not a CPA. Fast forward a little bit, I work in a governmental position. I'm watching people that have a CPA and doors are opening for, you know, maybe it's a position. I notice a lot of the people at the top are. And it was this bucket list idea, you know, or bucket list goal. I hit mid 40s, had a kid at 42. You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of...
Did your wife have anything to do with that also? You said
She's a few months older than me. So she had a kid at, you know, a little older form of 42.
Okay. All right.
You know, so here I am. You know, I've got a kid. A year later, I've got two parents. One has health problems. My mom has a stroke a year later. A year after that, she recovered from it real well. And I thought to myself, okay, here I am, you know, 44 years old. When's this going to happen? And I realized with my daughter being, I'm extremely involved with her life, with her being 2 years old, that she went to bed at 8:30 every night and slept all night. So I'm a night owl. I study at night. So I realized I can study from 8:30 on most of the nights. Like I said, my mom had done really well.
So you were 42 or so when you took the exam. How old were you when you actually took the exam?
When I actually took this, so I started studying at 44. And when I actually took the exam, the first one I was 45. So it spanned, I took three of them when I was 45 and one of them when I was 46.
And during that period that you were not a CPA, had you started working in the state and local government, or were you still with that financial planning?
I've been there for about 10 years, and this is all in the last couple of years. So yeah, I had been with it, working a governmental position.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.